Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death. This episode is on my playlist, Dining with the Disappeared, where we talk about people who have vanished. Before we begin our story, please hit the like button if you like the video, subscribe to my channel, and you can always join my Patreon. We have a big goal there, and I will talk about that at the end of the video. I'm Stacey Lee. Let's begin. This is Richard James Edwards, who most of us know by Richie Edwards. He was born on December 22, 1967 in Blackwood, Wales, and he attended Oakdale Comprehensive School. From 1986 to 1989, he was a student at University of Wales, where he graduated with a degree in political history. He had a happy childhood, he had great parents who loved him, and things were generally good in Richie's life. While in school, Richie met Nicky Wire, Sean Moore, and James Dean Bradfield. These four became the band Manic Street Preachers. Now, Ricky didn't have a lot of musical talent. This is a very unusual setup in a band. Richie started out as a roadie, but he was really great with lyrics. He was a prolific writer, but he just couldn't seem to master the guitar, and he couldn't sing. I make my living as a professional singer and a musician, and this is a very strange setup. They let Richie be in the band, even though his guitar most of the time was turned off. That is very, very strange because one, you're paying someone to be in the band that's not contributing anything. And two, I'm not really sure how they made it sound like there were two guitars when only one was playing. Maybe they played to a track with a guitar running in the back. But the lore is that Richie played once in a while. They'd turn the guitar up a little bit, but he really couldn't play. He was such a great lyricist that they thought of him as part of the band and they wanted him to be part of the experience, and they let him perform, which I think is very generous. Richie was also the conceptual guy in the band. Even though he didn't know music, he had a good ear for sound. And he kind of drove the band as far as the sound of the band was concerned, what styles they would play and the overall sound they would go for. A lot of people feel that Richie was the most important part of the band because he was such a great lyricist. Richie Edwards had severe depression, and he talked about it openly with interviewers. He engaged in self-harm behavior on quite a frequent basis and claims that was his only outlet at the time. At times, Richie required stitches as his wounds were very serious. He also had insomnia and would use alcohol to help him sleep. By about 1994, Richie was not in good shape, and he checked himself into Whitchurch Hospital for treatment. The band then appeared as a three-piece for a while Richie sought help. After Richie finished treatment, he rejoined the band as it toured Europe with the bands Suede and Therapy. On December 21st, 1994, the band played a show in London, Astoria. As the band played the final song for the night, which was called You Love Us, the members began smashing their instruments, and it got so violent that they damaged the lighting system. Richie smashed his guitar into pieces at the end of the show and seemed to be a little bit out of sorts. Not a big fan of the guitar smashing. I just hate to see instruments treated that way. And I know so many people that would love to have a beautiful instrument. And I don't know, it's just a personal opinion. I've never been a fan. This show in London on December 21st, 1994 would be the last show ever for Richie Edwards. On January 23rd, 1993, Richie had an interview with the Japanese music magazine called Music Life. He showed up for the interview, spoke with the journalist, and no one knew at the time that would be his last interview ever. On February 1st, 1995, Richie and bandmate James Dean Bradfield were supposed to fly to the U.S. to begin a promotional tour for their album entitled The Holy Bible. 2 weeks before this, Richie started drawing £200 a day from his bank account. By the time the date arrived to leave for the U.S., he had taken out £2,800. That's the equivalent of about £5,500 in today's economy. Richie may have been taking the cash out to use on his trip to the States, but he may also have been planning to use it for an expensive desk he had ordered from a shop in Cardiff. That desk was never paid for. One of Richie's last known acts was to give a book to a friend. The book was Novel with Cocaine, and he told this friend to read the introduction, which talks of the author staying in a mental asylum before vanishing. Then Richie, who was staying at the Embassy Hotel in London, took some books from his bag, put them in a box, and wrote a note that said, "I love you," to his girlfriend, his estranged girlfriend. He addressed the box to be sent to her, even though they had broken up several weeks prior to this. The next morning, Richie took his wallet, car keys, his prescription for Prozac, and his passport. He checked out of the hotel at 7 a.m., leaving behind his packed suitcase, his toiletries, and another bottle of Prozac. Instead of going to the airport to fly to the States, Richie drove back to his house in Cardiff, and there he left his passport, his Prozac, and a toll booth receipt. Richie Edwards then vanished off the face of the earth. And when I say vanished, I mean he was gone. Nobody could find him. In the 2 weeks that followed, there were several sightings of Richie. It had not been publicly announced that he had disappeared. After the announcement was made, a fan came forward claiming to have spotted Richie at a Newport bus station. Officials were looking for Richie when they realized they'd made an incorrect calculation. On the toll booth receipt Richie left at his house, there was a timestamp from 2:55. They believed that was 2:55 p.m. But then they found out that the software used at the toll booth was on a 24-hour clock. That meant that 2:55 was actually 2:55 a.m. They'd been tracking Richie's steps using a wrong starting time. On February 7th, a cab driver came forward, stating he picked Richie up from the King's Hotel and drove him around for a while, saying Richie just wanted to look around and then go back to his hometown of Blackwood. The driver said at one point, Richie laid down in the back of the cab and said he wanted to go to the bus station. When they got there, Richie said, "No, this isn't the place." And then he asked to be taken to Pontypool Railway Station. The driver said Richie got out at the Severn View service station, paid £60 in fare, and walked away. A week later, Richie's car received a parking ticket at that same service station, and the vehicle was then reported as abandoned. Near this service station is the Severn Bridge, which is known as a suicide site. Many people believe that Richie jumped off the bridge after the cab ride, but others are adamant he did not. Because in 1994, Richie told a reporter, "The S word does not enter my mind, and it never has done. I am stronger than that. I might be a weak person, but I can take pain." Richie Edwards' disappearance was all over the media, especially in Europe. Manic Street Preachers were never big here in the States, but they were in Europe, especially in England. Richie's disappearance was around the time of Kurt Cobain's death, and the media began discussing the rash of young musicians who were dying and disappearing. But it wasn't just musicians who were struggling. This was the time of grunge, and this type of music spoke to a lot of people. There was something about Richie's struggle and his disappearance that really touched people. After he disappeared, bags of mail from young people stating they were also struggling would arrive each day addressed to Richie. He kind of became the poster child for the depressed, the alcoholic, and people who engaged in self-harm. He had been one of the first people to openly discuss these issues, and that drew people to him. Now we have to talk about the 27 Club. I'm sure many of you know what that is, but for those of you that don't, the 27 Club is a group of musicians who died at the age of 27. Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, Richie Edwards, Amy Winehouse, there are more. But yeah, Richie Edwards was 27, and there are people that believe he wanted to be part of that club. What we do know is that no trace of Richie Edwards has ever been found. After the sightings of him in the weeks following him checking out of the hotel, there has not been a single clue. I don't think it's any coincidence that there was a big trip planned to America right when Richie was supposed to leave. That's a lot of pressure. A new album is a lot of pressure. A new tour is a lot of pressure. Maybe Richie Edwards was just sick and tired of the pressure. A book released in 2019 claims to provide new evidence that Richie staged his own disappearance. Richie was declared presumed dead in 2008, but like I said, many don't believe that. This book claims that Richie was fascinated with disappearances and had been for years. It also details a meeting between Richie and a woman at Cardiff's Whitchurch Hospital that has previously not been discussed. The author of this book claims to have interviewed people that state, Richie is living in a kibbutz in Israel. Everybody knows this. Okay, then why hasn't anyone gone to find him or interview him? There's also an account of Richie giving his passport to a woman named Vivian on the day he disappeared and telling her, I won't be needing this anymore. But I thought his passport was found back at his flat in Cardiff. There's just a lot of lore surrounding this story, a lot of theories and a lot of conjecture. Is Richie Edwards dead or is he living somewhere in private as a 57-year-old man? As it stands now, he has been declared dead. Unless he is not, and he decides to come forward, we will most likely never know what happened to Richie or why he disappeared. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, Dining with the Disappeared. Hit the like button, subscribe to my channel if you want to see more from me, and you can always join my Patreon. For a few bucks a month, if that's what you want to give, you help support the channel and keep it alive. And in the end, we want to raise money to donate to police departments that have cold case DNA in storage that cannot be tested because there's no money. There are thousands of sexual assault kits across the country that have never been tested. They cost between $500 and $700 each to test, and this is why we want to do it. One, we potentially close the case the DNA is associated with, and two, we get that perpetrator's DNA in the system in case they're connected with other crimes. After the first of the year, we are going to start one of those campaigns. It's been a little frustrating getting this going, but I'm not giving up. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your day with me, my friends. Stay safe and be kind to each other, and I will see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.